From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Alyssa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Here's a story of a discovery. It starts with the legend of singer Graham Parsons. In the late 1960s, Parsons fused rock music with country music. You could call him an alternative country music pioneer. Years ago today, Graham Parsons died. He was still in his 20s. Since then, his musical legend has grown. This year alone, there is a DVD documentary on Parsons' life and a reissue of his two solo LPs. Our story is from Mitch Myers. Myers is the nephew of children's author and songwriter Shel Silverstein. And when Silverstein died in 1999, Myers was in charge of organizing his uncle Shel's archives. He discovered a box of old recording tapes, and two tape boxes were labeled Graham Parsons Demos.
I couldn't believe it. 40-year-old audio tapes, supposedly recorded by Graham Parsons. Graham Parsons cut a romantic figure in the 1960s. He was the guy who moved the birds towards country music. You can hear his influence on their album Sweetheart of the Rodeo. Graham died of a drug overdose in 1973. He was only 26. His story got even stranger after his death. His friend and road manager Phil Kaufman stole his body and cremated Graham Parsons out in the desert of Joshua Tree, California. When I first found these old tapes, I knew they could be a big deal. So I started my detective work by calling people familiar with Parsons' musical history. I determined that the tapes could have been from the summer of 64, when Graham and one of his earliest groups, the Shilohs, did some demo recordings in Manhattan with folk singer Dick Wiseman. The main clue was that Dick Wiseman's name was listed on the tape boxes along with Graham's. I still hadn't heard the Parsons recordings because the tapes were at least 40 years old and quite fragile. But that didn't stop me from negotiating with the record label executive. The label guy said if the tapes turned out to be authentic, he had the connections to release Graham's music commercially. Even my NPR producer wanted to document the first listing of these tapes. Somebody on his production team thought it would be funny if the recordings turned out to be blank, kind of like Geraldo Rivera's entry into Al Capone's vaults. I declined my producer's offer. Months passed with no progress in getting a record deal. I had to know what was on these tapes, so I booked some time at a professional recording studio. I told my friend Ben that I was going to play the tapes once and for all. Ben's a huge music fanatic, and he offered to document the event with his camcorder. By this time, I was pretty confident that I had the missing 1964 recordings of Graham Parsons, so I agreed. The day finally came, and Ben and I went into the studio. Now, besides the Parsons recordings, I brought two other tapes with me. They were demos I found in the same crate of tapes as the Parsons stuff, except these had my Uncle Shel Silverstein's name written on them. I figured that we would just digitally copy everything, and I'd have enough rare recordings to keep me in the music business for quite some time. Ben and I watched the studio engineer as he examined the brittle old tapes. Then, the engineer connected an old-fashioned tape player to his digital recording system. Ben turned on his camcorder, the engineer pressed play on the tape machine, and the old reel started to roll. We waited nervously for the long-lost music of Graham Parsons to fill the air.
The lights are all out and the gas is turned off because you did not pay the bill.
Ben and I looked at each other in complete confusion. We didn't recognize the artist we were hearing. But it sure wasn't Graham Parsons.
Go home, sir, go home to your wife.
The tape seemed to contain nothing but bad generic pop music. The engineer fast-forwarded the tape a bit. Still no Graham. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I had these tape boxes with Graham Parsons' name and songs listed on them. But no Graham Parsons music? The only explanation was that someone must have needed a blank tape and had simply recorded over the old demos. They couldn't have known 4 decades later that Graham's work would be so valuable. The engineer kept fast-forwarding the tape and playing more bad pop, and I was just sick about the whole thing.
Ooh, I discovered a... right before my eyes.
Meanwhile, Ben was recording the entire incident on video. Dude, turn that thing off, I said to him. You're killing me. Finally, I conceded that there was no Gram Parsons left in the tapes. So, in hopes of salvaging the session, we turned our attention to the other tape boxes I had brought with me, the ones with Shel Silverstein's name written on them. Did I mention that I found the Silverstein tapes in the same crate as the Parsons stuff? Well, guess what happened? The same thing. Shel's music had been taped over with these boring pop tunes. I was totally dejected. But we were almost done, so we went through the final contents of our last reel of tape.
Here along my ocean waters, now I walk my friend.
And as we neared the end of our very last reel, a thin, reedy voice emerged from the studio speakers.
See your oily wreckage as it washes to my shore. Lots of people tell me now I'll see you never more.
It was a voice that Ben and I both recognized. No, it wasn't Shel Silverstein, and it wasn't Gram Parsons either. It was the godfather of American folk music, Woody Guthrie.
What did my wild waves whisper to me as I walked along my ocean sands today?
This was sensational. We'd actually stumbled onto four unknown performances by the outspoken folk singer from Oklahoma. We were coming even closer to the end of our last reel of tape and heard this.
This land is your land, and this land is my land. From the Redwood Forest to the New York Island, Canadian Mountain down to the Gulf Stream waters, this land is made for you and me.
Now, history tells us that Woody Guthrie wrote This Land Is Your Land as a populist response to Irving Berlin's God Bless America. And while there is a standard version of this iconic folk song, Woody had been known to add an extra verse or two as he performed the song repeatedly over the years. So, as our newfound version of This Land Is Your Land played out, my friend Ben wondered if it might contain one of those great lost verses that Woody occasionally sang. We listened and held our breath.
This land is my land from the Redwood Forest.
But the old tape ran out before Woody finished singing. We just had a laugh. We'd come so close. One minute we had nothing but bad pop music, and the next we had the most famous folk song of the last century. We found some small differences in the first part of Woody's tune, but we'd never know if there was yet another never-before-heard verse to Guthrie's most enduring composition. Still, the old tapes had provided us with some extremely rare recordings, and we donated them to the Woody Guthrie Archives in Manhattan. Our friends at the Archive think that Woody's performances may have been recorded by the legendary Mo Ash, perhaps even before Mo started Folkways Records back in 1948. Anyway, no rare Gram Parsons demos and no cool record deal. But, Smithsonian Institute, here we come.
I have kissed your eyes and lips in the dark here on my ship. Thought of reasons why I love you more. When I come back from the sea, will I find my country free like I dreamed of when I went away to war? Well, it's rolling.
Commentator Mitch Myers. To hear more of his Woody Guthrie discovery, you can go to npr.org.
Roll on waters, won't you roll, roll, roll. Roll on waters, won't you roll, roll, roll.